Please help me in welcoming Dr. Laura Ulrich.
Thank you so much. Really happy to be here and to see so many familiar faces. You know, I feel very lucky. When I came to Rock Hill, South Carolina 18 years ago, this month, actually 18 years ago this month, never did I imagine I would really have these kind of three separate jobs and be able to do all of this from Rock Hill, South Carolina. I'm really proud of that, and I'm especially proud of my new role. Indeed, the job that I have now has previously been held by people that lived in New York and LA and very big metropolitan areas, and I'm really proud to be doing it from Faro Drive in Rock Hill, South Carolina now. So now that I don't work at the Fed anymore, I don't have to give a disclaimer, so I can jump right in. All right, so I'm gonna go through this really quickly. There's so much to talk about, but I'm gonna try to do it in about 20 to 25 minutes. But I'm gonna talk about what's going on in the labor market and really some slowdowns that we're seeing in the labor market, but also what I would call a pretty significant sector imbalance that's happening currently in the labor market. I'll talk briefly about AI. This is probably the topic that we get asked about the most right now, and so I want to give you some insight into that, and then give you a little bit of insight into a broader economic outlook. And I'll try to save a little bit of time for questions. You might have to stay around a few minutes late for that. All right, so what's going on in the labor market? So this shows a three-month average, a three-month rolling average of the number of jobs added to the U.S. economy. And I want to point out to you that we need to add about 80 to 100,000 jobs a month, so about right where this laser is, to keep up with population growth, like to keep unemployment rates steady. So if I see a jobs report that's over 80,000, I think of that as like a decent jobs report. It does not have to be negative to be a weak jobs report. If I see something under 80,000, I'm thinking, oh, this is kind of a bit of a contraction. You'll see that in this post-pandemic period, we had extraordinarily strong job growth. We actually had extraordinarily strong economic growth in every way you could cut it. Between right after when COVID hit, right when the kind of recovery began, up until 2024. During that time, really around 2023, we started dropping below kind of this 250,000 jobs a month, which that's like a booming jobs market. So we had a transition there. And you'll see that here in 2025, we are in the midst of another transition to where we are seeing much weaker jobs reports. Over the past 3 months, specifically, we've seen levels that would not keep up with population growth. So what does that mean? That means that we're likely to see some increases in unemployment rates if that continues. There are some economists, you know, economists always have different opinions, but there are some economists I've heard say, well, this is just like, this is just getting us back to an equilibrium. We had this booming time period, and now we're settling out where supply equals demand. I do not see that. That is not my viewpoint on it, and really, it is because of this chart here. I have a piece that's going to come out. It was supposed to come out today, but it's going to come out next Tuesday. I'll post it on my LinkedIn to make sure you can connect with me and you can see it, where I talk about the imbalance that is occurring across sectors. What we're really seeing in the U.S. economy right now is that certain sectors, which, by the way, have traditionally powered a lot of job growth, namely professional and business services, which many of us in this room work in that sector. This is a lot of white-collar jobs, and manufacturing have been losing jobs. And this isn't just over the past, this is the job July report. It's not just over the past month, it's actually over the past 2 years. These sectors have been stagnant to declining, where what we're seeing is almost all the growth is occurring in private education and health services. And more specifically, almost all of that growth is occurring in healthcare. Now, this is not a surprise. 15 years ago, when I was teaching economics classes over at Winthrop University, I was telling students that the projections for jobs for the future, like the fastest growing jobs, were almost all in healthcare, because we knew that baby boomers were going to age, we're going to have a giant, massive population of retirees, they're going to require more care, and we are now living in that reality. So that part is not a surprise. But the problem is it's creating a lot of imbalance. You have to have certain skills to work in healthcare. Healthcare is not a sector where typically you can just like show up at the hospital and say, hey, I'd like to work here. You know, we all want our healthcare professionals to be skilled. So they do require certain credentials, many of which can be obtained at Midlands Tech or York Tech, right? Don't require a four-year degree necessarily, but do require some level of skill. And the piece that I have going live next week talks about the fact that the healthcare sector is almost 80% female. So what we're also seeing is that over the last 2 years, 66% of all jobs in the United States that have been created have been female-held jobs because of this imbalance. So this isn't an imbalance that we can rest on forever. It's like a one-legged stool, right? We can kind of prop there for a short period of time, but we need much better balance as we move forward. It also doesn't mean everybody should rush out to be a healthcare worker. Not all of us are meant to be. I'm somebody who is not meant to be a healthcare worker. Not everybody is meant to do this. Not everybody wants to do it. However, you know, sometimes I get asked in my new role, especially, what advice do you have for young people? It's not a bad sector to look at. You know, if I was advising somebody to go show up at York Tech's door today and to look at programs, healthcare, because of the aging population, is likely to remain a fast-growing sector. What are we seeing at Indeed? Our new data actually just came out. This was from a couple weeks ago. These are job postings. We indexed them to 100 right before COVID hit. And as of a few weeks ago, jobs were 5.2%, job postings were 5.2% above where they were before COVID. That is now a little over 6%. So postings are still elevated compared to COVID. But it very much depends on what field you're looking at. So postings are down in many of these professional and business service jobs. I mentioned that a second ago. You can see here, this is software development, banking and finance, human resources, marketing. I'm going to talk about software development in a minute again when I talk about AI, but it's down about 40% compared to pre-COVID. So there are some sectors that are down really significantly. But even things like banking and finance, human resources are down below pre-COVID levels. Postings are holding up a lot better in what we would call like maybe in-person sectors, so sectors that do require care, hands-on activity. So you can see there, dental, nursing, production, and manufacturing are still above their pre-COVID norms. I wanted to show you the two MSAs. This is really interesting. So this is, all five counties are either a part of the Charlotte MSA or the Columbia MSA. These are job postings specifically in this region. The pink line is Columbia. The blue line is Charlotte. And again, this is indexed, right? So this shows you the percent growth over time. So what this shows is that the index for Columbia is 138.7. That means that for the Columbia MSA, job postings right now are 38.7% above where they were pre-COVID. That's a tremendous increase, right? Especially in an MSA that had seen lagging job growth for a long time. Columbia had been one of the slower growing MSAs in terms of employment growth in the state. That has really changed. Charlotte is 11% higher now. So this is not an outlier. This actually is pretty, if you look across at the Fed, my job was, I was the economist for North and South Carolina, so I've spent a ton of time in both states learning those economies. And if you look at both those states, a lot of the mid-sized metro areas, so Charleston, Greenville, Columbia, in North Carolina, Wilmington, Asheville, Greensboro, are seeing much stronger growth. These areas have seen a lot of economic development announcements over the past 5 to 6 years, and they're seeing quite a bit of employment growth. So this is very good news. You know, I would say, you know, it's important to look at the national macro picture because that impacts everybody. It also impacts all companies here, right, if you're doing business outside of the state. But I still remain, I used to say all the time when I was at the Fed, like, regardless of what's going on nationally, the Carolinas is where I would want to be right now. Like, this part of the country is going to continue to grow, and I feel like that, you know, a lot of the jobs data continues to show that as well. One thing that's interesting, though, is people are holding tight. I just got quoted in an article on CNBC the other day, and the term they used was job hugging. People are hugging their jobs. They're not letting go, which I thought, and the graphic they used were these two people. It's really cute. You should look it up. I said it was the happiest picture they will ever use for an economics article, I think. But people are holding on to their jobs. The quits rate is low. The quits rate is at 2%. 2.3% was the 2019 average, and we saw a quits rate that was much higher, kind of this immediate post-pandemic period. Why is this? Because of economic uncertainty. People feel less certain about the economy, less certain about the job market. They're more likely to stay where they are. They're more likely to hug onto that job, and that's very much what we are seeing. We are also seeing, though, that layoffs are not popping up as being high. So there have been layoffs. Indeed, the company I work for even had a layoff recently. So there are layoffs going on, but they are not elevated to levels that would be concerning from an economic point of view. Not yet, anyway. We obviously pay very close attention to this. And hires rates are also low. And so now if you look, we're in this environment where we're in this low hire, low fire environment. So companies are hiring less. They're not laying people off. People aren't quitting. So there's not new space being created for new entrants to the labor market. So there's been a lot written recently about the difficulties of new grads and younger people in finding jobs. That is a real phenomenon. The unemployment rate for people who've just graduated from college is higher than it normally is compared to those who are further along in their career. That is a real phenomenon, but I don't personally attribute that to AI or some other factor more than I do this. This is people it's a stagnant market. People are staying where they are, and if people are maybe not retiring as soon as they expected, they're not quitting, they're not getting fired, there's not new room created at the bottom of the enterprise. So we need more churn in the labor market to have a healthy job market. So now we have a scenario where the ratio of openings to unemployed people is at below where we were in 2019, which looks a lot different than it did. You know, we kind of got used to how it was in that 2021 to 2024 period, and things have just changed. The prime age labor force participation rate is starting to dip a little bit. The expectations, the BLS believes that it will be down here by 2032. That is mostly driven by the aging population. But we do have an interesting thing going on where prime age labor force participation, so this is age 25 to 54, has grown much more recently. And you can see compared to COVID, right? Like females had a much bigger impact from COVID itself. To all the ladies in the room who had children doing school at home, like I did for a year and a half, we know why people left the labor market. It was really hard, right? So people did leave. A lot of working mothers left. But women have recovered very well. But this also matches that story I was telling about healthcare growing so much, that being so female-dominated. Also, there have been pretty strong growth in fields like education and state and local government, which are also female-dominated. And so we've seen stronger labor force participation rates amongst women. There has been a decline this year. And there was an interesting Washington Post article last week that did show that young mothers with children under age 5 have left the labor force in big numbers this year, and that is attributed to a lot of companies changing their flexible work positions, like calling workers back 5 days a week. Women have a higher elasticity of labor, which means if you make changes like that, women are more likely to leave the labor force. They're more likely to make a change. Wage growth has really come down. It's now on our measure at Indeed 2.9%. Our measure looks at posted wages, so it's not as good of data, if I'm being honest, than the Bureau of Labor Statistics data, which is at 3.9%. But both metrics are slightly above inflation, which means that there is some real wage growth going on, but growth has really slowed down compared to what we saw a few years ago. All right, what about AI? What role is AI playing here? It is already playing a role, and it's going to play a bigger role. How many of you in this room regularly use AI? Okay, I love to ask this question because, in theory, everybody should raise their hand. Because if you use your cell phone, you are using AI. Google is using it in the background. If you're using your cell phone, you are using AI. But most of you that raise your hand probably use ChatGPT or something similar to that. That is becoming something that is used in the workforce to make workers more efficient, but also to replace some workers. It is not happening in mass yet, and we do not attribute, AI to the sharp decline we've seen in tech jobs. So this is the tech in job postings in tech compared to overall. And you can see that the tech has declined by 36% compared to pre-COVID. This is a huge decline, right? But you can see that happened way before ChatGPT became public, went out to the public in early 2023, or very late 2022, I think. So we don't think AI has caused the tech job bust, but we do think it may be keeping it from coming back up. Because if you go in and look at our data, and one of the reasons I absolutely loved my job at the Fed, thought I would retire from there, but when I had this opportunity at Indeed, one of the reasons I left is because I can see stuff like this. This is job postings by specific job title. I know it's very hard for you to see, but I'll just tell you that most of these jobs that have seen really significant declines have the word developer in the title or analyst. These are coders. These are entry-level coders. Those jobs are pretty easily replaced by AI. I don't know if anybody other than me uses ChatGPT for coding purposes, but it's pretty good. But there are other jobs, so Oracle manager, SAP lead, engineer, data center technician, which is a job that you could get certified for at a technical college, software engineer, technology lead. There are some jobs that have really grown. The issue, though, is that these are more senior level jobs, and these jobs take a higher level of education. So one of the questions is, if the jobs at the bottom, those entry level jobs, go away, how do you train people for these jobs at the top? And that is something that we will have to deal with. So I don't want the narrative about AI jobs to scare people off from going into technology, because the reality is there are parts of technology that we're going to need even more people for to manage AI. But right now, we don't really see AI making a tremendous difference outside of some of these narrow bands of jobs. However, that's going to change. AI is going to develop and be able to do certain jobs. And so I've even started talking to my own children about how do you position yourself. My oldest son is getting master's in data science. That's a job that could be impacted. How do you position yourself to where you're attached to a sector in doing that job that maybe would be less likely to be impacted by AI, right? There's a lot of good research out there about which sectors are likely to be impacted or not. Overall, the existence of AI might increase the number of jobs that are available in the total economy, but it's going to change the structure of which jobs those are and the education and training you need to do those jobs. All right, really quickly, the economic outlook. So labor market has slowed in a lot of sectors. I expect that to continue in the short run. I'm going to be surprised if we see a lot more jobs added in the near term outside of some of these limited sectors. But the economy is still churning along. We're not seeing layoffs. We're not seeing, really high unemployment insurance claims and some of the things we would pay attention to as signs that we were going into recession, for example. But it's going to be interesting because we've seen, I came from the Fed, so I know a lot about the Federal Reserve, and they've got to balance the unemployment risk with that of inflation, which is also core inflation is ticking up a bit, and with tariffs it could tick up more. So this balance is going to be really interesting to observe over the next few months. There are upside and downside risk when it comes to policy changes that are going to really impact the economy. The upside risk, and Senator Graham talked about this briefly, upside risk is that there have been, the One Big Beautiful Bill did extend the tax cuts that were temporary. They would have expired at the end of this year. So that has happened. There's been some deregulation. This generally means faster economic growth, more jobs. The downside risk, though, is tariffs and tariff uncertainty and immigration restrictions. These are creating significant headwinds, especially for some industries. Tariffs in general, economists would believe that if you have tariffs, those are a tax on the importation of goods, and the cost of that tax would be passed on to consumers. That's what economic theory would tell us. That's what your Econ 101 textbook told you if you took that class. However, we've never tried tariffs at the scale we're doing it right now, so we could see something different happen. Right now I feel like the uncertainty is too great for me to like make a prediction over which one of these is a bigger impact. Immigration restrictions also in terms of labor. Immigrants do make up a decent percentage of the total labor in the United States, and so this could be a negative shock to labor supply, which could cause even tighter labor markets. And this is especially true in some industries like construction, agriculture, and leisure and hospitality. So in terms of recruiting in today's labor market, just thought I would leave you with a few things. From Indeed. Pay is going to remain important. I talked about how wage growth had really normalized, but still we're in a tight labor market. You saw what labor force participation rates are doing. We're still in a tight labor supply environment, and so pay levels are going to remain important. It's also important to maintain a deep talent pool. This means looking at how you're hiring, who is eligible to hire, jobs that you have that say they need a bachelor's degree, do they really? Could you look at people that have a criminal background? Could you expand your talent pools in ways that you haven't thought of? And then also in this world where people are hugging on to their jobs, which is a good thing for many employers that have good teams, how do you keep them, right? When we move out of job hugging, how do you keep the teams that you've built? That's through retention strategy. And then the last thing I'll say is, this year, if you look, there's a thing called the Economic Policy Uncertainty Index that measures the level of uncertainty in the economy. It's the highest it's ever been in the history of that data series. It's hard for people and businesses to make decisions in an uncertain environment. My former boss talked about, he always used the analogy of driving through fog. And he would say, there's some fog where almost everybody slows down in the fog, right? That's what they teach you in driver's ed, is if there's fog to slow down. But the fog can get so thick that you have to pull over. And so some companies have pulled over. They've stopped hiring for now. They've stopped, they've decided not to do expansion or whatever, carry on expansion plans. Others are just being more cautious and moving slower. And so you have to plan for that uncertainty as much as you can, right? Which is difficult to do, but we just are in an uncertain environment right now, which for economists is tough, right? Because it's difficult to measure uncertainty. It's really difficult. So I'll stop there. You can see all our work at hiringlab.org. Please connect with me on LinkedIn. If you're not already, I post all my stuff there, but I'm happy to take a few questions if there are some. Yeah, so he's asking about like the different generations and kind of the chop between those. There's so much interesting stuff there. I study a lot of this in my work. One of the interesting things that is difficult to model right now is baby boomers have been one of the hardest working generation, probably the hardest working generation in history, and they're working longer and harder. And so if you look at those younger generations, they're working about 15% fewer hours. Males especially are working about 15% fewer hours, which at a micro level is not a big deal, but a macro level is a really big deal, right, as baby boomers retire. There's some interesting work that's being done that's saying us Gen Xers, who were known as the grumpy generation that just nobody even talks about, we're just like grumpy, that we're going to retire earlier, that we're going to be one of the earlier retiring generations, I think because we just don't care. That's what people think. So there are some estimates that show instead of there being 20 years between the retirement of the generations, it will be 6-ish. If that happens, that's going to be a tremendous shift in the labor market, because then you've got to get these millennials and Gen Zs up ready to lead companies and be managers, and right? It's a tremendous loss of institutional knowledge. And so it presents real challenges within companies, and also the Gen Z generation especially is very different than the baby boomers. I remind people in my talks a lot that the History shows that a generation has never changed their behavior because an older generation wanted them to. So we can give up on that. It's never happened. But they want to work different. They also want to work hard, but they want to work different. And so this is presenting a lot of, I hear about it a lot from companies when we talk to companies. It's creating a lot of issues within firms to try to figure out how you transition through these generations. It's something I'm exceedingly interested in. It's just very, very interesting. Mm-hmm. Hey, Harry. Good. Yeah, this is one of the key areas of my research. It's something I've been interested in since my time at Winthrop, because I have three boys. Many of you know this. I have three boys, and I'm really eager to, like, help them get out of my house. I love them so much. I'm obsessed with my kids, but I just launched a second one this past weekend, so two for three so far. But anyway, males have had a harder time in the labor market, and actually, you know, in this piece I just wrote about healthcare, I talk about this. 95% of all speech language pathologists in the United States are female. 95%. There's no inherent reason for that, right? This is about cultural norms. But you make about $100,000 a year as a speech language pathologist on average. We did a really good job encouraging females to move into STEM fields. I'm one of them. It worked on me. I was a kid. They told me I was really good at math. You should focus on that. And I did it. And I moved into a male-dominated field. I think we have to start doing an equally good job, including encouraging men to go into helping jobs. That's where the growth is happening. I think it's where the growth is going to continue. And so if you have jobs, I mean, nursing pays a great wage, right? It's 80-something, I think 86% female. So we've got to figure that out, because the reality is, if you look at those jobs where I showed some of the sectors that are shrinking, those are male dominated. Yeah, so I think this is an effort. And by the way, I don't think that we need to stop encouraging women to go into STEM fields to be able to do the same thing on the opposite side, right? So it's not like prioritizing one, it's both. It's both. So I think this is I think this is really important. Really, really important. Mm-hmm. Yeah, good to see you. Thank you. Yeah, I know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's about 7% of jobs that are remote nationally. Most jobs require some in-office presence. I think that companies that have gone back to 5 days a week required, some of them have really struggled to maintain their labor force. I mean, the reality is I changed jobs because they asked me to come back 5 days a week in person. It wasn't the reason, but it was a reason. So why? I'm a working mom. I have three kids. My labor elasticity is very high, right? I can make a change. And so what ends up happening when you have too restrictive of an environment is sometimes the people that have the most ability to move are the movers, right? So that being said, I think it is important to have an in-person environment at some level. I don't have that now and I'm missing it. So I do think that is important, but I do also think it's important for employers to think about why people might prefer like a hybrid environment versus 5 days a week. And that for some workers, that ability to be a little flexible is really important for them to be able to remain productive in the labor force. And especially as we rely more and more on female labor, it's just the reality, right? If you're a working mom and you've got kids all over the place and you've got soccer practice and you've got this, it's very hard, right? It's hard. And so I think it's something that I understand why companies have such a desire to get everybody 5 days a week. I also am painfully personally aware of why that's hard for a lot of people. I think there's two sides. Yeah.
You might have just answered part of this, but I was going to ask you personally,
Yeah, so I never thought I would leave the Fed. I thought I would retire from there, just like I never thought I would leave Winthrop. I thought I would retire from there, and then all of a sudden I had the opportunity at the Fed. I'm like, I got to go. That kind of the same thing happened to me again. I will say, though, that for me, I am very interested in the path from high school, K through 12, to a job, how that happens. For some people, like myself, it's a pretty smooth process. I went from high school to college to job. Never had a period of unemployment. But it doesn't look like that for most people. And I'm interested in the messy parts. And in this Indeed data, I'm going to be able to see the messiness. I'll be able to see the job seekers, but also the job postings, right? So like if a job posting, people who are posting jobs actually getting the type of candidates they want? Is it something in the job posting that's preventing that? Are candidates not showing themselves in the best light? I'll be able to get into that data. So a lot of it was about the data that I'll have my hands on because I'm a nerdy economist. Also for me, I mean, as I said, like one of the things at the Fed was they did call us back 5 days a week. And for me, that was really hard because I was driving all the way up 77. I mean, I could draw you a really good map up to Uptown. And so that was really difficult, right? There's great things about living in Rock Hill, South Carolina, but one of them would not be driving to Uptown every day. And so for me, it was a way for me to grow my skills and be able to stay right here and be able to come talk to you guys, right? I don't have to move somewhere else. I feel really lucky to have been able to go from higher ed to government-ish to private sector. Yeah, whole new adventure, though. Whole new adventure. Mm-hmm, Randy?
Doctor, do you tell your sons and young people to get out and, you know, knock on the door, speak to people, see them, shake their hand, versus, you know, flood the internet with their resume?
So I will say, people in this room who know me, my middle son just went to college this past weekend, and the saddest thing about him going to college was he had to resign from his job at QT. And he's worked at QT at the truck stop on exit 77 since he turned 16. And he is the most loyal QT employee you've ever met in your life, to the point where he's using his QT backpack as his backpack for college. The rule in our house, because of the research I do, is that you have to have a job at 15. My youngest 15-year-old works at PWs right now. But at 16, you're going to have a job where you wear a uniform. And I don't know a person that works there, because if you show up late, I want you to get fired. And I have seen in my research, my opinion is a lot of the issues, especially with male workers, is they are not entering the labor force early enough. And the longer you wait, the harder it is. So I make my boys say all the time, no one else has to do this. I'm sure they don't. I'm sure they don't. But unfortunately, your mother chose this as her research topic. So you better get your Harris Teeter shirt and get on to work. That's how I feel about it. So one day they will be thankful, maybe. Any other, maybe time for one more question? All right. Thank you guys so much for the opportunity.